You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 279, Ranking the Disney CEOs. Welcome to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, the number one place to get your animation fix with animation addicts just like you. Each episode, we dive into the wonderful world of animation featuring Disney, DreamWorks, Pixar, and everything in between. From hilarious discussions and movie reviews to interviews with industry insiders, this show's mission is to brighten your day through our love of animation. So hop on your nerdy couch, grab some snacks, and get ready to hang out with your animation besties because it's time to dive into today's episode. Hey there, animation addicts. I'm Morgan Stradling.
And I'm Chelsea Robson.
We got a fun episode for you today because there is some breaking news as of the past few weeks. Bob Iger is back in as Disney's chief executive officer.
It's kind of like earth-shattering, but not really.
Right. If you followed the company the past few years, it's like, okay, well, it seems there needed to be a change. Trust me. We'll talk about it. The shocking part is that the old guy is now the new guy. So,
yeah, so that should be an interesting turn of events. Well, I am excited to jump into this. This is also a conversation that I have been wanting to do for like a year.
Oh, for sure. Even before any of this happened.
Yes. So we, for a long time, if you've been a long time listener, you've noticed they're like, oh, we're totally going to do a tier ranking of our favorite Disney CEOs based on, you know, all the standard and non-standard things that we judge things by. So generally speaking, we're going to be going off of a lot of things that are like factual statements. But then there's also just the, yeah, I just don't like him. Okay. So we're going to be going a little bit of the art and a little bit of the science side of what makes a good Disney CEO.
Let's hop into it.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
You're welcome to the wonderful world you know. Hey, it's okay, it's okay. You're welcome. Well, come to think of it, I gotta go. Hey, it's okay to say you're welcome.
So we are going to go chronological order, talk about each one of these CEOs, discuss a little bit about their bio, their pros and their cons, what they did, big accomplishments, just our thoughts on them. Some, obviously, we'll have a lot more thoughts than others. And then at the very end, we will rank them. Now, you might think, okay, Disney CEO number one, Walt Disney. Oh, no, no, no. Walt Disney was never CEO. It was Roy O. Disney, his brother, the financial guy, who was CEO. So even though you want to attribute, you know, so much of the Walt Disney Company's success to Walt, which you should, as far as talking about CEO-wise, we can't do that. So unfortunately, Walt, you don't make the cut because you weren't the CEO.
You were never CEO, Walt, but we love you because you were the guy. You were the guy who got everything going, and Roy was the guy that made it all stick.
I think that's really important, is that he had a very important number two.
Yes.
Or there was a duo here that was happening. One was the creative, one was the financial and the business, and they really worked very well together instead of maybe just solely being a creative forced into a CEO position and really having that creativity squashed out of you.
Yeah. And there is a very different, being a CEO is just a very different job than being the chief creative executive type person.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, left brain versus right brain. And so there's some people that it's like, there's a book that I love called Good to Great. And it talks about, you know, the companies that take their company from just a good one to a great company. Some of the key factors is they know their players, they know who's on the bus, and they know where to put each person on the bus, so that they're able to move it forward and everyone's playing the part that they do the best and not trying to like be something that they're not that great at, like innately.
Right. Exactly. All right. So let's talk about Roy. So Roy's tenure lasted from 1929 through 1971, obviously the largest of any of the CEOs. And he was family. He was one of the founders of the company, you know, with Walt. He was so instrumental. I know Walt Disney gets all of the fame and the recognition, but Roy really was there as the number two and a very, very, very important player. It's just because he wasn't the creative guy. He didn't come up with all the fun movies and whatnot, but Roy made it happen and saw that come to life. So, you know, like you said, he was the financial guy, co-founder. So that's also, you know, very important and notable. This is the only one who will be a co-founder of the company.
Right.
He basically, you know, went through 1971. He was going to retire early, but then Walt Disney died. And so he continued to stay as CEO because he really wanted to see Walt Disney World be completed, which was completed in 1971. Once that was completed, he retired. And unfortunately, he died 2 months later after retiring, which is really sad that, you know, this moment of rest that he wanted was the ultimate rest.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories of like the background of Disney, I was watching the making of Pollyanna, and there is a quote that they misattribute to Lincoln in the movie. And so, but
oh, really?
Roy didn't know that. And so he just went ahead and like had these like lockets made with that quote and Lincoln next to it.
It was like internet before the internet.
Exactly. And so it was just one of those moments like, yeah, he's the money guy. So it doesn't really matter to him, like these details. It's like, yeah, let's make that something we can sell, put it out there. Let's get more money out of this, which I thought that was amazing. But, you know, I just see him, and the fact that there is a Disney at all, you can attribute, I believe, to the fact that Roy was there to make it work. There were so many times that they were almost in bankruptcy. There were so many times where it almost failed, but both of them together, they just made such a great team. And he was the one that kind of secured a lasting foundation to be able to move forward past him. So good on you, Roy.
And it's so hard to list, you know, for some of these, we'll be listing like pros and cons and different accomplishments. And it's so hard to just really list them. It's basically the golden age, the silver age of animation. I mean, the first full length color animated film was released under him. Many, many, many movies. Just this legacy was created. Walt Disney World and Disneyland Park were opened under him. There's just so much that this period of time, he did it all. So we'll just put it there. I can't really think of a lot of cons. I mean, obviously they butted heads from time to time, but he really kept Walt in line, which was needed. And I think without him wouldn't have happened. So there is that. So let's move on to the next one, Don Tatum. So Don Tatum served from 1971 to 1976. He was a Stanford grad and he had two law degrees from Oxford. So this should sort of give you an idea of the type of manager or CEO that he's going to be, because there really are, as far as like CEOs come, different varieties. You know, there's the marketing guy, who, or girl, obviously, who, you know, comes up through marketing. They come up with all these ways to sell the product and be really innovative. On the other side, there's maybe the product side of things where they come up with the ideas. And in the tech world nowadays, you know, that's more of the engineering, that can be the engineering folks who come up with the features. But in a movie studio or an entertainment company, you know, that's going to be the actual physical entertainment venues that you come up with, or the movies and all of that product. So that's really important. And then there are the finance and the law guys that are very cut and dry. Usually they're looking for where can we cut, you know, so there's kind of these three, maybe more obviously, different types of CEOs. But the fact that he was a law guy kind of shows you what kind of CEO he's going to be. He practiced entertainment law until he moved over to Disney. He became a production business manager in 1956. And then, you know, just a few less than two decades later, overtook as CEO. He succeeded Roy. So, but he had a very short run compared, obviously, to Roy, just 5 years. He helped Roy, you know, bringing up Walt Disney Resort. He wasn't necessarily the CEO when that launched, but he was very instrumental. He helped with Epcot and Tokyo Disneyland, and also under him, Space Mountain is a notable. And he was just kind of known as the maximize profits guy.
See, I'm not sure if being the guy in charge of Space Mountain is a good thing or a bad thing, considering it's always down, but it's like one of the greatest show, like one of the greatest rides, but it's always down.
Yeah, so. Better that than Matterhorn, which is just like, you know, yeah, chiropractic visit waiting to happen.
That's true.
So, I mean, other than that, there's not really much to really say as far as the animation and the movie studios goes. These are really kind of down years. It's the Bronze Age, right?
Right.
It's just not a highlight for Disney as far as their movies are concerned.
So here's a question. Do you think the CEO has to also be a person that develops ideas, like leads from the front type of guy?
I mean, not necessarily. I mean, ultimately, if the company is ridiculously successful and profitable and people are happy, then no. But mm-hmm. I think that's kind of what you're talking about are the things that people more so see.
Right.
And are more visual and kind of go more into people's rankings or attitude toward the company.
Yeah.
So let's move into E. Carden Walker, also known as Card Walker. He served from 1976 to 1983, just a few more years than good old Don. He started Classic Stories, started in the mailroom in 1938.
I love that. Which
I love a good mailroom to CEO story. And then, you know, left. A lot of these guys served in the war or had military service. You know, he returned in 1956. Became the vice president of advertising and sales. So this was while Walt and Roy were still around. In 1960, he was elected to the board of directors, which is really exciting and a big moment. In 1966, obviously when Walt died, he then was promoted to become the executive vice president and chief operating officer. So really climbed those ranks. And you'll see in many companies, and then obviously in Disney, a lot of the future CEOs are selected from, you know, the board of directors or just the chief, the C-suite, if you will.
Uh-huh.
So he was chief operating officer. He was the president of the company from 1972 to 1977. So there was a bit of overlap when he was both president and CEO. And even though he wasn't necessarily the CEO for this whole time, he did spend 50 years on the board of Disney.
Wow.
Which is impressive, especially after having left CEO. Sometimes former CEOs, not always, but depends whether it's a positive or negative leaving, but former CEOs kind of just leave forever, which we'll see, you know, uh-huh. Ron Miller or others. But he stuck around even after that. So his notable things are establishing Tokyo Disneyland in the 80s. He worked with the Oriental Land Company to do that. In case you don't know, Disney doesn't necessarily own Tokyo Disneyland because of the way that property management and rights work in Tokyo, but he was able to make it happen where they have this deal with the Oriental Land Company. Then, you know, further helped before, you know, even way before that, Walt Disney World and Epcot, and then founded the Disney Channel with Ron Miller. Ron Miller was kind of his number two in 1982. So not a ton that happened here, but enough.
Because of the time that he spent there, I feel like no matter who you are, the fact that you're there that long, you're just able to create more of a consistency around you. And I think that can be a good thing. It can be a bad thing. Who knows? But it seems like this was based on what was happening outside of just animation specifically. You were still getting good films out there, and you, like, he's looking and actually expanding more into the park side. So I feel like he's doing a good job. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot, sometimes, you know, you, not everyone has to be the star, and not everyone can have this big moment. Sometimes you're the assist guy.
Yeah.
Or you're prepping and you're setting the stage, paving the way for the big win, right? Or the big person to come and then take the ball, score the shot.
Right.
So that's what I feel like these 70s were kind of leading up to, the 70s and 80s. It's just kind of leading up to a moment that needed to happen. You know, there was the rise of Disney, the fall of Disney, and we're kind of in these years of bringing it back. And so that's what we have with Ron Miller, the shortest of all of the Disney CEOs to date. 1983 to 1984, he was Walt's son-in-law. He married their only child, Diane Disney. And many people thought that this was simply a nepotism play, that, you know, he wouldn't have got the job if it wasn't because he was, you know, married to a Disney.
I mean, let's be honest, it's going to be easier if you're married.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we can't redo history and see what would have happened if he hadn't married her. But the fact of association to her, of course, got him some of those early jobs. But if you're not good at your jobs most of the time, you're not going to be promoted to even beyond, you know, the certain levels. And he was. So, you know, he first worked before this as a liaison between WED Enterprises, which we now know as the Imagineers, and Disneyland. So that was his main job, you know, in the 50s, was kind of this liaison between the Imagineers and ultimately what would become Disneyland. In 1977, he was a second assistant for Old Yeller. Of course, he got the job with Walt's help. Now, ultimately, we'll talk about his accomplishments, but ultimately he was removed by the way of the Save Disney campaign. Now, this campaign has been launched two different times by the nephew of Walt Disney. Whenever I think of, you know, nephew relating to Disney, I always think of Huey, Dewey, and Louie, you know, or, you know, the nephews of Donald Duck,
right,
just getting in the way. But Roy E. Disney, you know, really had opinions on, you know, and he was an employee and shareholder and very notable. So because he was Roy's son.
Yes.
Which we forget. I mean, we don't forget, but it's kind of like we always kind of remove Roy from the equation and make it seem like he's just his nephew. But it's like, no, he was another co-founder's son.
Yes.
Which gives him that much more credence and viability in my mind. So
I mean, this is like the cousins type thing. Ron Miller is his wife and is cousins to Roy E.
Right.
And so it's like you think about your cousin and be like, okay, now we work together, but she really wasn't involved. But the fact that when Ron married her, then he was put involved, which I understand. Like, you know, you gotta.
It would have been interesting to see if this was a different era, if maybe Diane would have had interest in working for Disney. You know, she never did and never worked in any capacity with Disney. And it kind of goes with the sign of the times. And then there's no right or wrong with that. But, you know, maybe if this was 50 years later, it would have been kind of like a battle between Roy and Diane taking over and just who's in charge or whatnot. But I mean, it's not like the company just immediately rolled over to Roy E.
Right.
Disney after his dad died. You know, it was so established at this point in time. They really wanted to put it in some good hands. So, yeah, you know, so that campaign was successful and got him removed. So he, after this point, I mean, he went
family
and bought.
Family unions are going to be rough after this point.
He bought a winery in Napa and continued to work it, you know, through until when he died. I believe he died in 2019. But he really never talked about Disney again. Obviously, because of Diane, they were really, it was important that they maintain the legacy of her dad. But as far as his time at Disney and everything else, he kind of just moved on, and that was the time of his life. But important notable things that he did, he created Touchstone, which
That's a big thing.
The adult film version of Disney, so that way they could release some of these more adult films. I put quotes around that, you know, without ruining Disney's family-friendly brand. You know, notably Splash was one of these that came out.
The very first one.
We talked about with Walker that he established the Disney Channel, you know, and then he also worked to make the first attempts at computer animation. So he was really paving the way for Disney's future success. And then I saw this and I thought it was really funny. He did get, even though he, you know, was never with the company or he was there in the 70s, he has movie credits. And I don't know, it didn't say which ones, but he gets producing credits on Pete's Dragon, Escape to Witch Mountain, and Inside Out. So I don't know if these are the new versions of that, because I think this, it was referencing after he left the company, he still got these producing credits. I don't know. But the thing that for me that stood out, whether Pete's Dragon, Escape to Witch Mountain, whatever, but Inside Out, how?
How? Yeah, that's really weird.
So, and why? So I know no information about this, but I need to do more digging to see what happened there.
And here we come, Morgan. the Michael Eisner years. Oh, goodness. This one, we've both read the book Disney War. And this book, it's like 40 hours on Audible, which
it's one of those.
But it was so fascinating as I was reading or listening to this. I didn't sit down and read 5,000 pages. No, it was just so fascinating, though. He was just how he started out at NBC and CBS and then just moved over. And he's like bringing all these people with him. And his whole arc of being in charge was just. It is definitely worth a listen. You should definitely check it out because it's full of the tea. You got so much stuff going on.
We will include a link in the show notes where you could check out this book because it is a must for any Disney fan, I feel.
I think so, too. Like, you really don't understand the company until you understand the Michael Eisner years.
So Michael Eisner served from 1987 till 2005. So very, very long. This is one of the longer ones to this point. Like you said, he was an entertainment guy. He came from Rival Studios.
And this was the first time that ever happened. Like everybody else is everyone's growing up in the company. And this one, they poached him. So that's a big deal.
Well, kind of. I mean, he was passed over for chairman at Paramount Pictures. So he left and he joined ABC Family.
Okay.
And so he worked. So, I mean, he didn't grow up in the company, but he very quickly, you know, he was an assistant to the national programming director and then senior vice president of programming and development at ABC. Well, ABC at this point wasn't Disney. I need to note that because he then later acquired them. So, he was a outsider, but a competitor in the industry, kind of, you know. And so he did lots of things as his notable accomplishments. You could say the Disney Renaissance was under him. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
This was one of the first, at least, you know, maybe there were other acquisitions that happened, but these are the big notable ones when you think of Disney. He acquired ABC and ESPN, mm-hmm. which were huge at the time. He did a lot for the parks. He opened Hollywood Studios in 1989, Animal Kingdom, Hong Kong Disneyland. Disneyland Paris opened in 1992.
You put that as a con.
I did. And I'll tell you why. And California Adventure opened in 2001. And I also put that as a con because California Adventure was opened on the cheap. And it really had no vision. It had a crappy vision as far as what they were trying to do with it.
Summer Pier. Yay. Basically,
in California. Right. Yeah. Like I could just go 5 minutes away and do that. Like, that's not for me what Disney's about. And there's so many examples. You could find some YouTube videos of just these rides that were just horribly done. And it just didn't stick with the Disney brand. And it was considered a failure for a lot of times. Now, I put Disneyland Paris as a con because you'll learn in Disney War that he was being encouraged to put Euro Disney at the time, you know, before they ultimately decided on Disneyland Paris, to put it in Barcelona or put it into Spain, and to put it by the Spanish coast, which was very much a tourist destination. and very beautiful. They had this amazing real estate, just would have been incredible. But in his mind, he was so set, like, when you think of Europe, you think of Paris, and was dead set on putting it in France, which France wasn't really like a Disney place, yeah, per se.
I mean,
and it just,
neither really is okay. Spain, but it's also, Spain just, I've visited Spain and Europe and I like Spain better. I mean, I spent more time in Spain, but it was just like, it's nice. It's really nice.
And so, you know, he did a lot. There was definitely the rise and fall of Eisner. And I think Eisner, when people think of him, at least initially after he left, people were very angry with him and upset with him. And I think, you know, they kind of ignore the early years, the first decade, and they mm-hmm. focus on the second decade. But he really did a lot of good for the company, and which we've discussed. Now, something important to note, he did have Frank Wells, who was kind of his number two.
I would assume that he's really the reason why there was a fall of Michael Eisner.
Yes. And he died in a helicopter crash in 1994. And it's really interesting because around that time, that's really like the mid-90s, the mid-Renaissance, mm-hmm. is really kind of like a pivot point when things start to change for the company as far as quality, what we had seen the years prior. So he had Frank was his Roy, essentially.
Yeah.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
And helped so much. And I really feel that him dying just changed the game for him. And it really affected him. You know, this wasn't just a business associate. It was a very, very dear friend, someone he'd been with a long time.
Right. And I just, there's parts in Disney where it talks about Eisner, like, really, after this point, really wanted to be seen as like king. And so he even put his desk like on a pedestal, so it was higher than the people that came in to see him at his desk. So they had to like look
yes.
up
oh
to him.
Oh my goodness! Please, guys, just never be like, that.
Never do this, please. But I honestly think that it was because Frank died, and because I feel like Frank was a bit of a person that kind of just kept his ego, kept Michael's ego in check, as far as like they were a partnership in a lot of ways. And because he no longer had that partner to bounce things off of that he trusted, that there was that like bond there. I feel like he's like, no, look what I've done. Look where I am. And that really ticked a lot of people off for a good cause. So the last decade, like, it was just so bad how he was.
Oh yeah.
It was like, it's just amazing when you read how just awful this man was at the end. But once again, I want to see a Michael Eisner era with Frank Wells again. That would be amazing. If you could break Michael Eisner up into two parts, then it would be the Frank Wells version and then the without Frank. And the with Frank is, I think everybody would be like, yes, that was the best. But with the good, you also have to look at the bad. And so, where shall he fall in our rankings? We don't know.
We shall see. So next up is Bob Iger, who served from 2005 to 2020. And he had grown up, you know, with Disney. He was under Eisner. He served as president and chief operating officer from 2000 to 2005 and was, you know, kind of waiting in the wings, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect timing. A lot of this, so many of these, you know, getting the key position is just timing, being in the right place at the right time. And he did help mend the relationship between Roy E. Disney and the Disney company. This was another, around this 2005-2006 period, there was another Save Disney campaign that uh-huh. Roy waged. I remember I went onto the website, I contributed, I was like, yes, exactly. Because you remember the early 2000s as far as animation, the quality just was not there, yeah. Chicken Little. And then they decided that they were going to shut down, you know, 2D animation, which was horrible. And this really affected Roy because he felt like this was one of your flagship parts of the company,
right.
Animation and traditionally animation. And just to abandon it was offensive to him. And so what Iger ended up doing, he named Roy a director emeritus, and he remained on as a consultant for the company. So he patched that up and he did a really good job. I mean, really is kind of a people person. But when I think of Iger, man, all I think about is acquisition. That's all this guy, you know, there's different ways that you can grow a company, especially when you're a publicly traded company and you're having to show growth because the market wants to see that your company is growing year on year out, that you're always producing more profit, more money. And that initially in a company's, you know, early years is easy to do. You know, you start at zero, it's easy to grow from there and show year over year growth. But then once you hit a certain point, it becomes a lot harder. And so one way that companies do this, you know, one way is they just improve the product and they make it better and sell that way. But another way is they say, you know what, screw it, let's just acquire a whole bunch of companies.
Yeah.
It inflates the value of our portfolio. And it look what we did. Wow. We're doubled. And it's like, but did you? So there are some notable acquisitions. Pixar in 2006, $7.4 billion, which is huge.
Yes.
That was he had a great relationship with Steve Jobs, was able to make that happen. I mean, if you read, I think I read Bob Iger's book. And he talks really, he's just mostly it was really frustrating, to be honest. I'll include a link in the show notes if you want to listen to it. But he's just like all of his accomplishments when he talks about his career is just like all the acquisitions that he did. And it was like, but what else is there? So Marvel in 2009, only $4 billion. Now, you have to remember at this point in time, Marvel wasn't
not
the
Marvel
that it is today. Marvel was really dying. It had sold off different rights to different studios, and it was just all over the place, and it just wasn't popular. It was a comic book company, but as far, and you know, and obviously we remember some of the animated TV shows of the 90s and whatnot, but those weren't big, those weren't huge. It was really a dying brand, and he still saw that and said, hey, you know, even though they've sold off a lot of their big characters like Spider-Man, they still have these other ones that we could do something with, you know, such as all of the Avengers or nearly all of them, you know, Captain
right.
America, Black Widow, Iron Man. These are names, which is crazy to think that like people mostly didn't know about.
Yeah.
They were not the big Marvel.
It wasn't the Spider-Man
properties.
It wasn't.
No, it. Right.
Like basically Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Right.
Maybe X-Men so, as well, because they had a good run.
Yes. But they had been, at that point, they'd been sold off to Fox.
Right.
So, I mean, they really had this like very narrow pool of characters, but they still took a risk on it. It's proven to be incredibly
successful. Yeah, and even at this point,
they didn't
have Spider-Man. Like Marvel.
Right.
So it's like, what else do you got there, Marvel?
Right, right.
But that is the fact that an Iron Man was nothing. And so you look at the start of Marvel, which is its own, story in and of itself. It was after that Disney bought them that they were like, okay, breathe new life into us, go. So
yeah. So then there was Lucasfilm. So initially, when I was typing this, I mistyped and I wrote 41 billion instead of 4.1 billion.
Oh.
And I was like, holy cow! No wonder George Lucas sold. That's incredible. I mean,
right.
4.1 billion is still amazing.
It's still amazing.
But I looked back.
Take
and
the
I was
money
like,
and run.
Okay. That makes more sense. 4.1 billion. So still at this point, Pixar was your biggest acquisition. Another notable is he got Oswald the Lucky Rabbit back, which that was the pre-Mickey that had been basically stolen, poached, or you
right.
know, legal, whatever. You know, Disney lost it. And Roy really loved this and appreciated this and thought that this was just so great, showing that he had so much faith in the company and was doing right by the company, right?
Yeah, Roy E.
There's no reason to go back and let's acquire this forgotten property from the 20s that really literally has done nothing since. You know, the owners of it just didn't capitalize
right.
like Mickey Mouse. So there we go. You know, and during his time as CEO, Disney was named got so many awards as like the most reputable company by Forbes, most admired company by Fortune magazine, most respected, blah, 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 blah. It was like company of the year in 2013.
Wow.
You know, he on multiple lists was best CEO so many different times on different lists. So, you know, he really brought the Disney movies back. And just a huge comeback for Disney live action, even Disney animation to a point. He launched the Magic Bands at Walt Disney World, which are now officially at Disneyland. And that's just been a huge moneymaker for them.
Mm.
So I was really disappointed when I read his biography that there really was nothing about the parks. And, you know, I wanted to see, okay, you acquired a bunch of companies and you made some movies, but what else as far as the parks, because the parks are such a huge part of the company now. But he didn't. Yeah, that was someone else. So that is Bob Iger so far. I can't really say anything about his new, you know, his 2022 reign so far. But lastly, let's wrap it up with Bob Chapek. He served just 2 years, 2020 to 2022. Oh. He was previously the head of Disney Parks Experience and Products. So you think, oh, okay, a parks guy coming in. He understands the parks. He understands the people. He understands what people want. But spoiler alert, he didn't. He really was a money guy, more so than previous CEOs. But we'll talk about it. But he had a huge expansion of the Disney parks, even just in these 2 short years. So, you know, the opening of Shanghai Disneyland.
Yeah, that was
he,
huge.
Doubled the fleet of the Disney Cruise Lines. Huge, huge investments into new lands and attractions at Disneyland and Disney World. Now, these aren't as CEO. These are as his Disney Parks Experience and Products.
Okay.
Yeah, because that would be great. But then, you know, unfortunately, as soon as he took over the reins, you know, he had done all these amazing things with the parks and really done a lot. 2020 hit, and he basically was the COVID era CEO.
Right.
And not too many companies did great COVID, especially theme parks, because of draconian lockdowns and just certain states that, you know, you have Florida, which opened up relatively quickly after in 2020, and Disneyland was closed for a whole entire year and had a very slow reopening. And mostly that was just due to the different states and their opinions on that. And so he had to deal with that, which was unfortunate. The theme parks were closed. The cruise lines were closed. He had to lay off thousands of employees. I mean, what else could he do during this time? So notable accomplishments, I'd say initially at the launch of Disney Plus. Now that technically came out November 2019. So technically that's an Iger accomplishment, but he kept it going. However, basically he angered fans by doing so many different things with the parks. Everything seemed like a money grab. Mm-hmm. You know, things that were previously free were now major charging. Things that were just part of the Disney experience, people felt were lost. It just felt like you were just like a piece of cattle.
Ooh,
at the
gimme,
Disney
gimme,
parks.
Gimme.
Yeah. And he really angered fans and investors when he called Disneyland pass holders an unfavorable attendance mix.
Oh gosh.
Meaning that there are too many pass holders in the parks, ultimately, because pass holders, they buy the pass and they go and they go and they go and they go, and they typically don't spend as much as the family who has been saving. This is the once in 5 years that they go, or the once in a lifetime, or maybe they go once a year, and which I totally get, but that's a part of your business model and part of your fans, and you just have to kind of learn to work around it. But he really was known for it, and you can see this in there's lots of blogs and articles and all sorts of videos all over talking about this. But he really changed it to start catering to the mega wealthy, you know, the European, the Asian, the international visitors to the parks, who would just come and had so much money, would stay at the top tier resort and would spend on every single experience and food and dining and all of it. Those were the people that they really wanted to cater to. And it left a lot of just the regular old fans, you know, the fans who had an annual pass that would just go for a few hours on a Friday night, left them really, really upset with him.
Yeah. The fact is, I was watching this, I came across this Instagram profile that they were doing like basically fake news out of Disney, but everything that they posted, I completely believed because it was just so bad. Like Disney now posts, Disney now charges for this. Disney now charges for this. And like, he like had all these, you know, Disney's going to own Anastasia kind of like headlines. And then it's like, but it felt the fact that I did not even question if it was real or not. I just accepted the fact that, yes, this is the Chapek era and this is what they think of everybody, is just, it was really sad. And I haven't been to the parks this year, but my brother and sister-in-law and their family went, and they were just like, yeah, because you have to pay for, now you have to pay for fast passes. Now you have to pay for all these things. It's like, what? What?
Yep. Yep. I came just a few months ago, went, and it was a bummer.
Yeah.
So ultimately, what led to his downfall was there was a disastrous quarter four 2022 earnings. And Disney does their financial quarters not on the calendar year. It's on the financial calendar. So Q4 ends at the end of basically October and the end of September. And then they usually have the earnings call a few weeks after that. So by the end of October, this came out and it just showed that Disney was losing billions, you know, yes. And then there were maybe some funny accounting things that were happening to try to hide some of this, at billions as far as Disney Plus and a variety of other things. It was just not a good thing. So it ultimately led for people calling for his removal, and it happened. And then lo and behold, Bob Iger is back in the business, which this is not an easy thing to do. To end a CEO, they have this golden parachute typically, which is if I sign on a CEO, I don't want to be, you know, given the boot after a year or two. You have to give me time to really prove and see a strategy through. So if the company and the shareholders decide, no, we're done with you, there's usually a very large payout that happens. This is called the golden parachute. So they ultimately, Disney decided it was more worth it to pay him to get out millions of dollars than keep him in. And so that's what happened. And there we are. We now have Iger again. I'm not going to speak to him. It's only been a month, but we shall see. So now that those are all the, wow, we've just gone through the whole Disney history.
That's so many.
And now it is time for us to rank.
Ranking the CEOs. All right. So as far as pros and cons that we had, as far as Roy, you know, I honestly have to say, just out of my own, the fact that you were right there with Walt during all that time and kept it going all these years, like, I think it's easy to say that he's the number one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for me, I don't know about you, but for me, I would say Roy O. Disney, he was the number one. I don't know. It's the nostalgia factor, the fact that he kept it is a thing because of you. So, yeah. So I think that's an easy win for you. I mean, Don Tatum and E. Corden Walker, honestly, they're forgetfuls. Like,
yes,
nobody knows who they are. So I would say just by that, I'm going to put them. So we're going to do like A, B, and C tiers. I'm going to say, okay. let's do that because it's going to be too hard for me to like rank them, but I would put them in the C tier just because,
yeah,
like who are they? I don't know. Ron Miller, from where would you put Ron?
So I have a list.
Okay.
I have Roy at the top, number one, Iger number two. Eisner three. Four, Miller. Five, Chapek, because he's the worst. But Walker and Tatum as six and seven, just because, like you said, they're so such unknowns and just non-entities. They're, I guess, like my hatred. That's not how I feel. But, you know, my disdain for Chapek could push them even below basically these two unknowns from the 70s. But before, it's just, I'm not. There were a few good things that he did that were notable. So that's my list.
Okay. So I'll do the A, B, and C for me. So A level is Roy. C is for Don and Walker, Tatum and Walker. Ron Miller, I'm going to put you in the B category. One, because I know you and the fact that you did do some good things. And even though I feel like you were... As if I'm talking to him, I feel like his...
you're giving him business advice, like career advice going forward.
Like, I feel like there really wasn't a lot of like push forward in what I've seen of his, other than the fact that he did Touchstone. Like, that was his first thing. Like, yeah, sure, we'll add this to it. I don't feel like there was really any movement forward in the company with him. So maybe I'll put him actually back down to the C level. Eisner, I mean, like I said before, if I could switch him and do half Eisner A and Eisner B, I would definitely buy the shirt, Michael Eisner, the early years. Yeah. That would be an amazing shirt to do, like, I love Michael Eisner, in parentheses, the early years.
Nice.
So I would put him, he did so many things in the early years. So early years, I'm going to put him at the A-list. Later years, I'm putting him at the, like, C. Like, people wanted him out. They were ousting him. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that you're making everybody looking up to you is like, oh, come on now.
Right.
Bob Iger, I can't put him up at an A-list just because there's, even though he did go ahead and add all of these things to his catalog of everything, I feel like I just, there's one video of like the story of Pixar that I watched. And I just remember him quoting as to why he bought Pixar. And he said, well, I was just down at the parks and I was realizing that the only characters that were really popular right now were the Pixar characters. So we might as well just buy them, you know? So it was just kind of like it's a scapegoat almost. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like the lazy man's success principles, you know, like let's just buy all the people that are doing good things and then hope that they stay doing good things. Maybe, maybe not. And for the most part, even Marvel was great at the beginning. Lucasfilm has just been a disaster all the way around. Oswald is like, okay.
You see him at California Adventure, like people wear his merch, but that's about it.
Yeah. So, I mean, Pixar was really the only thing that was going good, but maybe was it Bob Iger that took Pixar down on the lower side, or was it Bob Chapek, or was it the combination of both, you know? So I don't know. So I'm going to put Bob, he did grow it to a very large amount. So I'll put him at a B level, and then Bob Chapek, definitely E. Maybe C, D. We'll go with D level. I was just not a fan of just chipping away at the smaller fans.
I think you're right. I think, yeah, you've convinced me. This is always the way. Because... Yeah, these guys, Walker and Tatum, they were just kind of status quo, didn't do much, didn't do bad. There weren't like notable bad things that happened. Whereas by Chapek, yeah, he's bottom on my list. He's 7 out of 7. He has now totally just kind of ruined the Disney brand. And it's not the fact that the COVID pandemic happened. It was very specific choices to really just anger a lot of people, literally everyone I talked to,
right?
You know, so and then as far as Iger and Eisner, I can see both of them are just kind of like met, like they're good ish
right,
but they definitely have their bad points.
Yes.
So which one is the worst of the bad points? Is it Eisner or is it whatever? So Roy, top of the top, that's at least we can agree on that.
How about we switch Michael Eisner and just add a Frank Wells? Like, the first part, we're just going to say Frank. And Frank is definitely going to be like the number right under Roy.
right.
The guy that like nobody really knows except for the people who know.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, I think if I were to, that's how I'm ranking them. Like the Frank Wells era, you're going to go up at right up with there with Roy, because there's so many things that the reason why I'm a Disney fan is because of that era. And the reason why everything kind of fell apart was because of Michael Eisner of his own volition. So so that's my ranking.
All right. Let us know your thoughts on this episode and your thoughts on the different Disney CEOs through the years. This was a fun one to do. We've had it on our list for so long. So I'm so glad that we were finally able to do it and dive back into these names. I mean, I consider myself a hardcore Disney fan, but I could not have brought, you know, Walker and Tatum
right
off the top of my head. Excuse me. That was like a yawn / cough off the top of my head. So there you go. Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Animation Addicts Podcast. You can find all the show notes and the links. I linked the various books that we talked about, Disney War, The Ride of a Lifetime by Iger, which again was so annoying because he calls it The Ride of a Lifetime, but literally never talks about the parks or the ride. So I was like, that's why I was mad. But all of those are linked and you can read more. And thanks for joining us as usual. We'll see you next time. We're going to be doing a few Christmas movies, so this will be definitely a fun ride, speaking of. So go to rotoscopers.com/279. And until next time,
we are the Rotoscopers.
Talking to my friend Chelsea.
Hi, Pippa. Oh, I need to tell you this is definitely gonna be the patron part. I need to tell you about my time at the Latin Grammys.
Okay, one second. Let me put on a show for Pippa. Pippa, this is the last one.
No, I want to. I actually definitely want to.
What do you want to do?
I want to make an ornament.
Make an ornament?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we can make an ornament after I'm done. So can you go outside and play with them? Can you go put the trains away? And,
no.
Oh, yeah. Well, then we won't do it if you don't want to. L-A-Z-Y. L-A-Z-Y. Pippa, can you go put all your shoes away and then we'll make a special ornament? Okay, then we won't.
Yeah.
Then go do it, girl. Just do it one bit at a time, okay? Put your Tony on and then you can sing. You should see her face. Like, this is the worst thing I've ever asked her to do, to put her shoes away.
You've been listening to the Animation Addicts podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to subscribe and be sure to leave us a 5-star review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you want to help spread the word, be sure to share the podcast with your friends on social media. Just don't forget to tag us at Rotoscopers on Instagram and use the hashtag AnimationAddicts. For all the links and full show notes for this episode, go to rotoscopers.com/podcast. Now, if you still can't get enough for your animation fix, be sure to subscribe to us on YouTube and visit rotoscopers.com for more animation news, reviews, and interviews. Thanks for listening.
And thank you!